Hi, I'm here with John C., and he's going to talk to us a little bit about what he was like, what happened, and what he's like now. So thanks for coming in, John. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
I guess we can start with what you were like. Where were you? Where did you grow up? And where did you grow up?
Well, to introduce myself, my name is John Carlson. I am an alcoholic. And my sobriety date is August the 22nd of 1966. I was born in Canada, in north of Edmonton, Alberta. Basically, I started drinking very young, because put it this way, I left home when my first drunk that I had was when my brother got married, and I was 12 years old, and I stole a pint of whiskey, and I drank it, and I got sick, and I ended up sleeping it off in a ditch. And so then that got from there till finally when I grew up. When I was 15, I walked aboard my first merchant ship. I had to lie about my age, so that I could get a job. I was a wiper on a Princess Louise ship that traveled from Vancouver, Canada to Alaska and back every week. And the first chance that I got on that, I ended up getting drunk on that one. And that one, I drank most of all, to start with, that I drank half a bottle of slow gin. I ended up crawling on my hands and knees all the way down the dock from the CPR docks in Vancouver on my hands and knees, because I was scared that I was going to fall over the end of the drink. Anyway, let me back off for a while here and start up from where I come in. I was an everyday drinker. And in the beginning of my life, I was brought up with my nephews and stuff, and I was always being picked on and everything about my name and everything else and stuff like that when I was at home. And I always wanted to get away from home. I ran away from home a couple of times because I was, didn't like what I had at home. So I was very headstrong. I was very headstrong and when I was young, and lived on a farm. And that farm at that time, we were very poor, extremely poor, in fact. So, we're lucky to have food on the table. And even at times, we did not have food on the table. So that's how I grew up. I didn't like it, but there was nothing that I could do about it. So when I said, I didn't like going to school, I hated school. What else did I do? I think my background had a lot to do with why I was so much of an individual, being repulsed about doing anything, listening to any authority of any kind, and that was one of the reasons why I ended up when I got into drinking, that. It was a way out for me to live life on life's turn. If I had a drink, that gave me an ability to think like a drunk should live, I guess. And that's what I chose. And if I had a bottle or something else, that gave me courage to do what I was supposed to do, and turn around, get in an argument with everything and anything about anything. So therefore, it was very boisterous. I was very hard to handle, so to speak, because and I'd always get into trouble. I'd be in trouble one way or another. Anyway, next question.
So how did you come up to AA for the first time? How did you hear about it?
Well, my brother was in AA, and he got sober. Basically, his average day drinking, he'd drink at least 2/5 of gin a day. And I knew that he had gotten sober, although that I never had anything to do with my brother at that time. But it was my way of knowing that he got sober. And anyway, all that I was interested in was getting into a bar and more or less basically basing my ideas on. Now I'm 15 years old when I started sailing, and now I was a man doing a man's job, right? And nobody could tell me at home what to do anymore. And the only people that told me what to do about drinking or about doing anything was the people that I worked for. After that, I drank every day that I could drink, and that eventually, when I quit sailing 12 years later, after being on different parts of the world and everything else, I'll get into that later, but different parts of the world, that I was an everyday drinker. We'd go into different ports around the world, and my first idea was, how close is the nearest bar? Let's get some money from the captain, and then after that, go to the bar and get drunk. Let's get drunk and be somebody. That was my philosophy. And I held that philosophy for as long as I was drinking.
And so your brother was sober in AA, so you knew about AA?
Yeah. Basically knew. I never knew how it run and how it operated or what. I never knew that. I just knew that he had quit drinking.
Mm-hmm. So where was your first meeting and who?
My first meeting was in Renton, at the old Renton group, at the old American Legion Hall. And that in itself was something. But to get down before that, to get into my drinking, I was an everyday drinker. I had a construction company at that time. I was as a construction company, and instead of being working in my construction company, I spend all day long sitting in a bar somewhere drinking a lot of the times. And the people that I had hired for me would be working one day and sitting in their cars while I'm paying them wages, because I didn't bring any material for them to work with or to do the work they're supposed to be doing while I'm sitting in a bar getting drunk. So one day I turned on and I come to the point of, like I say, it was an everyday drinking. And I was sicker than a dog. I was trying to get sober and I couldn't, and I didn't know what to do. So I finally went home and I went to the basement and into the house that I had built. And I put my back against the wall and I took my clothes off, like my shirt off, and get up against the wall so that I could cool down and then try to get myself down. So when my wife came back, she had been gone shopping, and she come home, and I told her then, I says, take me to the doctor's office. So I'm sick, and I got to do something. I was really sick because I was an everyday drinker. I get drunk, then I turn around and end up sobering up. And then as soon as I'd sober up, I'd get drunk all over again. It was a Chinese merry-go-round about what I was living like. And I was not a good husband to my family at all. I was not a good husband to my family, to my wife, or to anybody else. So that one day when I told my wife to take me to the doctor's office, I turned around and I went. And at that time, it was against the law for anybody for drunks to be allowed into hospitals. And so the doctor says, I can't put you in the hospital for being a drunk, but I can put you in the hospital for having acute nervous disorder. Now, if you're a good drunk like I was, if you'll know something about the shakes, I had the shakes so bad I could hardly hold a cup of my drink that I had or before, because I'd be shaking right out of the whiskey out of the glass. But anyway, I ended up in the hospital in Renton, and I stayed there for 2 days. And while I was there, I made a call to Alcoholics Anonymous, the inner group, and three guys came to see me at the hospital. And out of the three guys, two of them stayed. The third one took off. They took me to a meeting. I went there on a Tuesday, and I stayed in the hospital till Thursday. On a Thursday night when I was home, I turned around and they took me to the first meeting, and that was at the old Renton, at the, like I say, at the American Legion Hall in Renton. I attended my first meeting there, and that was August the 22nd of 1966. From that day to this, I have never had a drink. I have never had a drink. The thing is that I wanted to do, and to this day is still maintaining that I believed in one thing, especially in the beginning, that I had an awful fear of ever taking a drink again. To that day to this, I have never had a drink, but the nice thing about it is that as little as I performed or did unknowingly when I joined the program, that they would ask me to do something like making coffee or doing whatever. But basically it's this, that I was deathly scared of ever taking a drink again. About 9 months after I sobered up, you mentioned the word God during that time, and I didn't want to get involved in any part of the program. All that I wanted to do was just stay sober. That's all I wanted to do, because I understood that if I didn't drink, I could get sober, I could stay sober. How I did that, to this day, I had a hell of a time doing that, but I did it. And that night, about 9 months after I'd been on the program, and during that time, in that era, there was only 10 meetings in the entire south end of Seattle, West Seattle, Kent, Auburn, Bellevue, where else? There was only 10 meetings in the entire south end of Seattle. So we were limited as to how many meetings we would go to and who we talked to. We had to use the telephone for talking to anybody. And it was not the telephone that we have today. It was a dialing telephone. We'd have to dial each other and I'm gonna have you get the phone numbers from people. But anyway, about 9 months after I sobered up, that I was laying in bed, and I said the magic word, I said the word thanks. and the most magnificent thing happened to me that day. That day to this, the fear of taking a drink of alcohol has left me and has never bothered me since, right? So therefore, I'm extremely grateful to the program. I'm extremely grateful today, I understand, when you talk about having a higher power, a power greater than myself. I had no clue. I had no idea, and I did not want to hear about it when I first joined the program because I was scared of if I get off the track of staying sober, I'd be back on drinking again. I did not want to do that. I get carried away with my thoughts. When I talk about this, but I'm still sober today, and it's great that I'm able to sit here and talk to you about this. Next question.
Thank you, John. I think that's wonderful that you came in here. I appreciate it. I love hearing your story.
The what?
I love hearing your story. It's amazing.
Any more, or is this the end of it?
Well, I think you pretty much covered what you were like, what happened, and what it's like now for you.
Mm-hmm. The only thing different now, that the one thing that I did do, I'd like to put in there, I did get involved. For example, when we started the Benson Hill group, that group was held in my home when we started that group. Today, as of today, I have been part of 5 different groups that have started, like the South Center Breakfast Group, the Bellevue Breakfast Group, the group held Sunday morning breakfast group. I forget the other ones.
There was a great meeting called Cascade Breakfast.
That
was a great group.
Right, that was still part of. I was part of that group. Mm-hmm. What else? I also made many, many 12-step calls back then because there was no Alamo Club. There was no treatment centers. There was no different anybody to call to, halfway houses. There was no such a thing or anything else like that. There was just 12-step calls. And to this day, I still think that the difference in the quality is a lot different today than what it was back then, because we had to make 12-step calls. We'd take people into our homes, which I did, and kept them sober and stuff like this for a weekend and for whatever time, and doing things like this. We do not do that anymore. The courts have taken our job away from us, I think. Because put it this way, the thing is, when you're making 12-step call, you become aware of walking into somebody else's house, somebody else's room, somebody else's car that's been crashed, burned out, whatever. Then you see where you were at when you were drinking. There, but for the grace of God, go I. That's what 12-step calls is all about. When you make that, it reminds you of who you are, where you come from, and what we are today. I'm all over the place today.
That's okay. It sounds to me like the biggest part of that story that you told is that Alcoholics Anonymous gave you a meaningful life and replaced your fear of getting drunk again with a life full of purpose and meaning.
Most absolutely. To this day, I still maintain the greatest gift that I've ever had out of Alcoholics Anonymous, the program. Now, get this straight. When I say the program, I don't say the steps, I don't say the traditions, I don't say anything else. It is the program of Alcoholics Anonymous that I work. It is for all of us. It is for me. It is for all of us. And that is what kept me in. The greatest gift I've ever had was the fact that I got that fear I've ever taken away from me about drinking. I have never had a fear of ever being around booze since. And in fact, all my life, my sobriety life, I have always had booze around me of one kind or another, somewhere with someone. So
you were set free.
Yeah. I could have all the booze that there is in the world. What I hated, what I absolutely, I'll say this, what I hated about today is that they have grocery stores with all kinds of booze, every kind of booze that you can possibly think of. And if they, you know, if you can think of any more, I'm sure they can get it for you, right? Where was all that booze when I sobered up? They didn't have that. They only had bootleggers on Sunday, right? And I was sick of the dog, right? I'll tell you another one. When I took my last drink, to this day, I still see my last drink, the drink that I left on a bar when I walked out of this bar that I used to drink at. I left a half a drink on the bar, sitting on the bar. Now, no good drunk would possibly leave a half a drink on the bar and walk out. That was just being a drunk. I mean, you finish the drink and then walk out, right?
Yeah.
Well, I left the drink. That drink I still see to this day. I still see that drink. I still see that barmaid that served me that drink. I still see the bar in my head of where I was sitting at. And I still see that drink. And what really ticks me off is that when I left that bar, they never did get a hold of me to find out what, you know, the rest of that drink, what I wanted to do with the rest of that drink. They never called me about it, right? I mean, really, you know, taking a drink away from a drunk. Terrible.
The nerve.
Yes.
So, do you feel complete, John? Is there anything else you want to say?
Yes. I could talk all day on, but yes. Next month about this. The things, the places I've been, the things that I've done. It has been a beautiful life. There's ups and downs. There's pains. There's growing pains. But it's all worth it because today, for example, I don't know if I should say some of this stuff. Today, I have been retired for over 30 years from my job. When I was working, my wife told me, she says, when you get to be 62 years old, she says, you're going to be retired. You're going to retire. And I said, you're crazy. We can't afford it. When I walked out of the house one day, and she says, you tell the boss today that you're going to retire at the end of the month. And I shook my head. I said, you're crazy, but I'll tell him. I walked into the office when I retired. And I told the boss, my wife told me to tell you people that I am retiring at the end of the month. And they all bust out laughing. Why? Because my wife, you know, good husband. You always say, yes, dear, no, dear, right? Naturally. So anyway, at the end of the month, I retired. I've been retired ever since. So that was 30-some-odd, just about 30 years ago. And I have never had to do a day's work that I did not want to do. Isn't that fascinating? Amazing. I am today, I lost my wife 2 years ago. We were married for 37 years. Beautiful woman. She was a model. She was very artistic. She was very, she knew exactly what she wanted out of her life. She was, you know, which was great for me. She even asked me, if you can about imagine some woman asking a drunk to marry her and live with her for 37 years thereafter, right? That happened. And today I live in a retirement home. I come, I go, I got a two-bedroom apartment that I live at in Puyallup. I'm free, I'm easy. I live as a free man. Ever since I joined the program, basically, when I look at it, I'm a free man. I have
nobody's telling you what to do.
Yeah. Not only that, like detriments hanging around my neck.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a free man. I don't have not objections. Anyway, the hell with it. But being a free man means that I can go to bed at nighttime and sleep. Right?
With a clear conscience, right?
Yeah, clear conscience.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the good Lord gave me that. I worked a step, but I also read a lot of what is in the books of Alcoholics Anonymous. They printed my story before this about what I did and didn't do in that deal sober in Seattle. They what am I going to say here? I think I'm done, because put it this way, there's too many things that today that I can come and go. And you know what, when I was sitting at the bank, and when I sold our house, and I sold, and the lady at the bank turned around, when I joined the program, I didn't have a nickel to my name. I didn't have a dime to my name, and I owed everybody. When I was sitting at the bank after selling my house, right, get this. This doesn't make sense to me either when I think of it. She told me, she read out the amount of money that they were going to give me. It was a ton of money. I mean, a ton of money, right? And when I looked at the total amount that between my wife and I, we had accumulated over $500,000 worth. And we're sitting there, and she says, John, today, she says, you can go wherever you want. Well, I've been in 23 different countries. I've been in these places around the world. I can tell you what the booze is like in those places. I can't tell you a damn thing about it other than there was the booze in those places when I was drinking. Today, I don't want to go anywhere. I put the money in the bank and it's still there. I only take what I need for my rent. I can come and go. I got a friend named Cowboy and travel here, travel there. I traveled for 16 years. I was going into Arizona as a snowbird. I can tell you all kinds of stuff that I've accomplished since I sobered up. That's what this program is all about. It's about living sober. Living sober means whatever it takes. You read, what is it, page 3 in the fourth edition. I think it's around 365. I think it is around 360. It says to do whatever it takes, but to stay sober, because God and AA were able to do something for me that I was unable to do for myself. Thank you very kindly.
Thanks, John.